Welcome back to Eye on Careers. I am here with the Lord of Diamonds, Peter Mius, the chairman of the Dubai Diamond Exchange. Peter, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's great to have you. It's really interesting. You're telling us how, you know, the diamonds have shifted, and part of, I guess, the challenge that Europe's having in the economy is also showing up in the diamond trade, is now as this business starts to slowly shift to the east into the favor of the United Arab Emirates.
Indeed. If you look at the position of Europe, for example, with regard to the consumption of diamonds, it's actually an amazing fact that in the distribution charts of the beers, Europe isn't even mentioned anymore as a separate entity. It's part of rest of the world. So the number one consumer is, of course, the United States.
United States of America.
Obviously, who still consume close to 45% of all polished diamonds in the world, which is enormous. It's going down, but they're still the number one.
I thought they just consume 45% of everything. Just diamonds, food, everything, no?
Yeah, you know that an interesting fact on diamonds is the Americans actually buy a lot of diamonds, but they buy the cheaper quality diamonds.
Ooh!
So they buy spotted diamonds.
But
they
bigger.
They buy diamonds with an inclusion. So Americans like big diamonds, but there can be a big black spot in it. Very strange. When you compare it, for example, with China and Japan, they cannot stand any imperfection in a diamond. So they really go for the absolute diamond without any inclusion. And America is completely the contrary.
It's supersized. They like to supersize everything.
Indeed.
Which is good, I mean, in some respects. But I wouldn't know. I wouldn't even notice the spot in the diamond. I mean, I think...
Well, you need a microscope for that.
You need a microscope. So, you know, I think that's what it is. When you're at the dinner table, you've got your bling on.
Well, you know, the when I joined the business, Diamond has actually told me there's one thing you need to know. That is, people buy diamonds and they pay for something you cannot see with the naked eye. So up to a certain grade, a VS1, for example, which means very small inclusion 1, that's something you cannot see with the naked eye. So a diamondaire would never buy a loop clean stone for his own wife because you cannot see it. Nobody will ever be able to see that there is an inclusion.
So if I get like, you know, a D clear or I get like an N, you couldn't tell the difference from the naked
eye?
Yes,
of course.
Oh, you could. Of course.
An N is an extremely low and yellow color. A D is a very, very white,
so you would see
extremely
that.
White color. But another thing you should know is that, for example, many people put their diamonds in gold. And, of course, the color of the very, very white color suddenly goes down a few levels when you put it in gold. So if you really want to put your diamond in gold, then don't buy a D color. Buy...
That's why they had the white gold and everything, and that's when the white gold came out for the diamonds.
In white gold, you can, of course, put very white diamonds, obviously. Then the white of the diamond is much more clear.
So what's the story behind you actually coming down here to Dubai? Because I understand there was maybe a little bit of friction, as they may say, before you decided to
became the CEO of this Diamond High Council in Belgium in 1999 when I was 36. And I really thought this is the job of my life.
At 36 years old,
yes.
You're a high flyer. That's speed again. This has been one of the themes this evening, is speed.
Yeah, it was something I really wanted to do, and I did it with all my heart. It was actually also not easy because 3 months after I became CEO, suddenly this whole blood diamonds thing came out. So we had to defend ourselves from all sides against attacks. Suddenly all these CNBC, CNN stand on the front of our door.
Is that true, though? There's a bit about that some of the diamonds have... Basically,
in these days, it was true. In these days, Africa was full of a lot of civil wars. There was Sierra Leone. There was a big civil war going on in Angola. They had been fighting for 25 years between the regime of Dos Santos and.
So we've come a long way from that.
Yes. Today, I Today there are actually no blood diamonds anymore. It's a tiny, tiny part of a percentage, maybe 0.2%, because Venezuela, for example, is not part of the Kimberley Process scheme, but that's more because of political reasons with the U.S. than with any other reason.
Yeah, we'll just
there is
that.
Guinea, where there are some problems. Now there has been, as you know, a putsch in the Central African Republic, so you could consider these small portion conflict diamonds.
So you're basically the Diamond High Council is probably the top diamond council in the entire world at that time.
Yes.
So you are the number one diamond guy in the world at that moment.
Well,
you're the Lord of
Diamonds.
Maybe a little
bit exaggerated, but I was definitely in Belgium.
There could only be four or five other guys who could even, you know, it was the number one, is it?
Definitely, yeah, in Belgium.
Okay, you're being
definitely
a bit
in Belgium.
Being embarrassing you.
Okay, I was the public figure
in
Belgium.
It was very, 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 very senior post.
Yes.
For this profession.
Yes.
And so everything's going swimmingly until what happened?
Yeah, well, I had to cope with a lot of conservatism in the trade. At a certain moment, we actually all knew that we were losing market share. And the Diamond High Council had its own laboratory. You know, diamonds are graded according to certain standards. And we had the second largest lab in the world called HRD. Like the Gemological Institute of America, GI. So I went through a whole battle with my board saying we have to internationalize this because this will bring out our brand, Antwerp. And it was approved, and then it was approved again, and then there was a budget approved, and then I went actually to New York, and I went to Mumbai, and I found space. We started recruiting people, managers. And at the very last moment, they stopped it. They said, no, this is our own intellectual knowledge. We're not going to internationalize. And the reality is that now they did what actually they opposed me to do because it was the right thing. But I got so upset with this almost backward mentality and conservatism that we got into a big fight.
It was an all-out brawl.
Yeah.
The wild dogs going at each other.
Sorry. I basically decided to leave. I said, I'm going to leave. And it was then in these days that Ahmed, the same Ahmed bin Salim, approached me through...
But this was a very public fight because you guys were fighting in the media.
It was a very public fight. And it was actually a battle which I was going to lose. Because, you know, I'm the CEO, but the board of directors is the board of directors. And the moment would come that they would just kick me out for something I wanted to do good for them. Eh?
Yeah.
That's what was so upsetting.
This happens a lot, though, I think, you know.
Yeah.
You see this. It's
anyway,
not uncommon.
If I look back to it, the fact that happened to me was the best thing that happened in my life. Because it basically urged me to rethink what I was doing. And it actually brought me to Dubai, where I'm now for 8 years. And I'm very happy that all these things happened. But I was not very happy then. I was actually, for a year and a half, very unhappy and actually very angry with what happened.
Many sleepless nights. You thought this was the worst thing that could happen to your career. You thought it was a career killer. But it was actually, your curse was your blessing.
Absolutely. It's the best thing that happened in my life. And actually, the people that did it to me, last time, I haven't told them personally yet, but I will build a statue in gold for them here in Dubai.
They have crafted their own worst adversary.
Absolutely.
And were the fuel that drove your rocket ascent, 400% growth here in Dubai. So that's fantastic.
Yes, indeed.
If you're out there and you're feeling a tough time in your career, you've been fired or things have turned against you, this could be your greatest gift. God's giving you the gift of desperation. He's giving you the fires that will forge your metal. And that's actually how you make a samurai sword. I don't know if you know how you make a samurai sword. You take the metal and you have to melt it and pound it and fold it and pound out the impurities until after you do that for days, then you have the strongest sword that's ready for battle. So they forge your metal during this time. And so now, what are your key philosophies? I mean, obviously, you know, you've managed huge staffs. You manage a global business. You manage a complicated business with a very challenging supply chain. What are some of your North Stars or guiding business philosophies that help drive that growth?
My personal philosophy in everything I did in my life is that you have to do what you are good in. So when you're young, the first thing you have to analyze is, what am I good in? You don't have to try to be good in everything. You do not have to develop 100 skills. Every man has some skills in which he's better than someone else, and you have to focus on these skills. And the second step is that when you're good in something, generally you also like to do it. So that's already a second thing. You're good in it, and then you like to do it. And what normally follows when you do that is that you also make money with it, and normally good money. So that are the three things which I think which lead to success. First, focus really on what you are really good in. And don't develop 700 skills. You don't need all these skills.
And so you think the well-rounded executive, this is garbage. This is something of the past. Now you want to be focused in one area, build a spiky skill set that's focused on a niche specialization.
Yeah, I think that's the future because, well, Well, the world has become too complex to be a master in everything. So it's the best business model is to assemble masters in their own field and to bring them together.
The assembly of masters. This is Peter Mios, the chairman of Dubai Diamond Exchange, a man who's delivered 400% growth to one of the most exciting free zones I think we've seen. It's the largest free zone and a free zone that will be building the world's largest office tower. I love the ambition. I love the spirit. We're going to have a few more of the secrets to success in just a minute.